Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Evans.
I always tell you the Dog Nation Daily is the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Now, listen, at this point in time, we're a lot more than a podcast. We're on all kinds of video platforms and radio and everything else. But when we first started this, I always wanted that to kind of be our motto, our slogan, the show for fans, which means I want to think like a fan when I do the show. Now, it happens that I am a fan of the Georgia Bulldogs. But beyond that, you know, I kind of want to kind of present a fan perspective on the show. There's plenty of media doing things for other media. I want to do this for the perspective of, you know, of the fans. So when I think about sports, I kind of think about how fans think, or at least I try to, and I hope I'm always able to do that. And with that in mind, there's one group of fans in the SEC that I find fascinating. Now, I'm going to make this be about Georgia football, so stay with me just for a second, and I think we'll all kind of arrive at the same point. I've always been, at least in the last few years, been fascinated by Kentucky basketball fans because I think it must be incredibly frustrating to be a Kentucky basketball fan. I'll give you a couple of examples of what I'm talking about. John Calipari's been the coach there, and Calipari has been really good at producing NBA talent, but seemingly not as good as you might expect at turning that NBA talent into a winner there in college. For instance, the other night I saw this stat. This is amazing. Do you realize there were seven former Kentucky players that had 20 or more points on the same night in the NBA? That's how deep the roster of former Wildcats are in the NBA. So many that seven of those guys could go for 20 or more on the same night in the NBA. And yet, with all that being said, the Wildcats haven't been in the Final Four, I think, since 2015. Am I right about that? It's been a number of years since Kentucky has kind of used all that NBA talent to get to the Final Four. And if you're a Kentucky fan, that must be incredibly frustrating. Like, you can turn on the TV every night and see Anthony Davis and Karl Anthony Towns and all these guys. But what are they doing when they are in Lexington? And Calipari kind of shrugs that off sometimes. But if you're a Kentucky fan, you're not shrugging that off at all. The whole point of your fandom is watching these guys do something for Big Blue, not for the Lakers, the Timberwolves, or whomever else. In fact, I guess it's kind of gotten so potentially toxic there in Lexington that Pat Forty from Sports Illustrated wrote the other day that Calipari may actually be wearing out his welcome there at Kentucky, and I find that to kind of be fascinating. But it's important to note that while in college basketball you can have this kind of blue blood power who has all kinds of NBA talent but not really using that to win at a very high level in the college game, at least compared to what you would expect for so many lottery picks, first round draft picks, things like that, it's important to note that college football really isn't that way at all. You can have the disparate, you know, results, bunch of draft picks in the NBA, not a lot of wins come March. You can have that in college football, college basketball, but it doesn't really seem like you get that very much in college football. As a, for instance, this year's reigning national champion Alabama, look at some of the mock drafts that are out there, they may have as many as five first round picks in this upcoming April's NFL draft. Last year's national champion LSU, in the draft that preceded their winning the national championship, they produced four first round draft picks. The national champion before that, the Clemson Tigers, they had three in the first round, four picks taken in the first 40 picks. So the defending national champion in the draft that follows that almost always has the big-time draft success to kind of either validate the national championship season or maybe, more accurately said, kind of provide the key data that suggests they were always heading towards that championship. It's just one of the good things about college football. Obviously, the players who play this game, and you don't fault them for feeling this way, they have a selfish ambition in mind. They want to use college football to get to the NFL. But the teams that have the most players who are capable of doing that typically find a way to also win at the high level too. That doesn't work that way in college basketball. The Kentucky example is obviously proof of that. But in college football, Bama this year, LSU the year before that, Clemson the year before that, these teams that have a lot of big time draft picks just seem to go on to also enjoy a lot of team success there as well. The collective goal of the team and the individual goal of the player seem to be fairly closely aligned with each other, which obviously at this point in time is where we get to Georgia football. And honesty compels me to admit that one of the things you'd like to see more of from Georgia in its pursuit of a national championship, and the questions related to how soon can it get there, and how on track is Georgia to kind of join the Alabamas, the Clemsons, the LSUs, the teams that I just mentioned, who've won the recent national championships, what you do on the NFL draft. How many guys you put in that first round is a pretty good indicator. It's a pretty good predictor of exactly what either you did this past season or what you could be on track to do in future seasons. That pipeline of former 4- and 5-star recruits coming through your program over the course of 3 or 4 year span and then leaving as guys who get to shake Roger Goodell's hand in a non-pandemic world, of course, but guys who get to shake Roger Goodell's hand, guys who go on to make the big-time bucks, that's how you produce the kind of business decision mantra, the way that Terry and Arnold described that for Alabama and Nick Saban has sold that program so well on. That's what Georgia's aspiring to. So with that in mind, there will be a lot of attention paid to what happens for Georgia in this upcoming NFL draft. How many guys does Georgia put in the first round of this draft? And as you start thinking ahead to next year's draft, how many of the guys who chose to stay at UGA for one more year, how many of them can also kind of be those guys taken amongst the first 32 picks? With that in mind, when Kirby Smart spoke to folks last week around kind of National Signing Day, even though it wasn't quite a National Signing Day, you know, for Georgia, their recruiting work was done in December. One of the questions that Smart did get asked was, the guys who chose to leave the program, what do you say about them? The guys who chose to remain, how good a shape are you in? And Smart, as you might imagine, when it comes to a topic like this, chose to use his words carefully. I think Smart's got to play the political game on this, but this is what Kirby Smart said.
I don't get real heavily involved and put emotions into those decisions because we do the best we can to educate those guys and give them information, and ultimately each player and his family have to make those decisions. So I look at it as, you know, it's an investment in them, and we spend a lot of money on the getting the information, whether it's the services we get, talking to NFL teams, traveling to visit with parents. We invest a lot of time and energy into getting them good information to make a good decision. But it's up to each and every guy. And I'm not very critical of the decisions guys make. I don't think you actually know if you made the right decision or not, because there's probably not a wrong decision. It's more what suits the needs of others. Some guys have graduated and it's on to the next step. Other guys maybe are close to graduation and I think it's time for them to make that leap. But we certainly support those guys. I'm looking forward to seeing those guys work out and train, and we're fired up about the guys that decided to return.
So Smart's going to be careful with his words there. He's obviously not going to criticize any player who's chosen to move on the NFL draft, nor is he going to make it seem like he tried too hard to keep them from doing what they want to do, because obviously the eyes of future recruits are always watching this kind of stuff. Their ears are listening close to hear what Kirby Smart has to say. But if some of the guys who did leave as juniors had more eligibility at Georgia and chose to come back, if they were to leave and not be taken in the first round, it does become fair to say, would it be better for those individual players if they had been back at Georgia another year and gave themselves a chance at that kind of financial reward that can come for being a first round pick? And on this show, we do care about Georgia football. You know, in addition to liking the players, we care about the team that they played for. It obviously would have been good for Georgia if they chose to do that. So, you know, when you look at some of the mock drafts that are out there right now, it's amazing kind of the wide range of predictions that you see. Some of y'all follow this stuff very, very closely. You can check my work on this. We'll talk to Connor Riley also about this coming up in a moment. But it seems like to me Georgia has, of all the guys it's about to put into this upcoming NFL draft, Georgia's got 3 guys who have a chance to be a first-round pick. It certainly seems like Azeez Ojulari is the most likely of the former Georgia players to be selected in the first round here this year. And then there's a chance that Tyson Campbell might be a first-round pick, and there's a chance that Eric Stokes might be a first-round pick. And I use the words might and maybe here because in one case, I think I saw one of the NFL.com mock drafts that did have Stokes going the first round, but another one that had him, you know, outside the first round. I've seen Tyson Campbell projected as a first round in some mocks, but I've seen him as low as a third round pick in some others. I have seen Azeez Ojulari in virtually every first round mock I've seen, but I believe there was a CBS Sports kind of, you know, rating of draft prospects of the day that kind of had him somewhere along the lines of prospect number 55 or somewhere along those lines. So at least one projection that at least suggests the possibility that Ojulari might not be taken in the first round. And this is more than just, you know, kind of making college football into a feeder system minor league for the NFL. As I said before, there's a pretty close tie right now, pretty close connection between teams who are producing the big-time draft picks and the teams who are winning, you know, national championships. The teams are doing that. The Alabamas, the Clemsons, the LSUs, they're the ones who've been producing these multiple first-round draft picks in recent years. And you want Georgia to be the same kind of NFL pipeline. For reasons, by the way, beyond just winning a national championship, it also potentially becomes fodder for negative recruiting if you don't do that. So I think the lead up to this upcoming spring is going to be really interesting. The next frontier for the Georgia program, there's obviously a lot of very good players in this program, and there are a lot of guys who've left this program, had a chance to move on to the NFL draft, and guys who are enjoying NFL careers right now. Saw where Natress Patrick just got picked up by another team recently. There are a lot of guys who've played at Georgia who are playing in the NFL, but the next frontier for the Dogs is to produce the same kind of first-round picks, multiple guys, year after year after year, the way the very best programs in college football have done, and that's one of the things we'll be watching from UGA come this spring. Now, while I'm on the subject of the NFL draft, what's going to happen there, let me also kind of bring this to mind. I saw a very fun tweet from Malik Herring, former Georgia defensive lineman, who obviously tore his ACL around the Senior Bowl, and that's a terrible setback for him, for a guy that I think all of us really love and enjoy, but certainly Herring seems to be in good spirits here. For those of you watching in video, I'll show this to you. He loves, apparently, Frosted Flakes cereal, and so on Twitter he says, came home to some Frosted Flakes after surgery, been loving them since I was five. It must have them on the road to recovery. I don't know if this is on his way to an endorsement for the cereal or not, but it's nice to see a smile on Herring's face, and good to see the all the cereal there around him as he gets ready to go through a recovery. So we wish Malik the best. And for all the UGA guys who are trying to make a way for themselves in the NFL, we wish them well for that. Not just because it benefits them, although we're happy that they get a chance to make some money, but obviously because Georgia benefits as well when it is viewed as the kind of program that is a pipeline to the NFL. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Good to have you with us, no matter how you get to us today, live on video, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. It's been great to be on Twitch here over the course of the last few days, having fun with that. We'll tell you that if you're looking for us on Twitch, we are Dog Nation UGA on Twitch. That may be the best way for you to search that. You can watch the show the same way you watch it on all the other video platforms. If that's a video platform you're already spending a lot of time on, great way to get us there on Twitch. At Dog Nation UGA on Twitch. You can check that out. Of course, all the podcast platforms as well. Radio with our friends in Athens on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Just really happy to have you as a part of the program today. Of course, it's Connor Riley coming up in a moment, and all of it made possible today by our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. You know, when it comes to a couple of the real significant issues that homeowners can face, water creeping into your basement, your garage, your crawl space, cracks in your foundation, those are the kinds of things that can generate a lot of worry. I'm here to take some of that worry away from you, though, because when you've got a problem, you want a company that's good at providing solutions, and that's what Engineered Solutions of Georgia is known for. They are a solutions-based company. That's why they've got the word solutions right there in their name. So when it comes to your waterproofing and foundation issues, trust me, ESOG can be a solution to those problems. They're also a proud partner of UGA, make some fun to do business with. They've got two full-time engineers on staff. These are really smart folks. They've been good friends of ours here at Dog Nation Daily for a long time. So please give them a call. The number could not be easy to remember. It's 678-ESOG-NOW. That's 678-ESOG-NOW, and that'll get you in touch with my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. All right, before we get Connor Riley today on Dog Nation Daily presented by ESOG, I want to go around the doghouse here for a moment. We've talked a lot about Will Muschamp in the lead up to him coming to Georgia. Now it's official. Muschamp is on the Georgia staff. Last week when Kirby Smart met with reporters, he did kind of talk about some of the details related to Muschamp. And so as we kind of close the book on this chapter of will he be at UGA, won't he, I did want to at least give you a chance to hear a little bit of the audio from Kirby talking about this and a couple things to say about Muschamp in relationship to that. Here is first Kirby confirming that, yes, the former Florida and South Carolina coach will indeed be an off-field UGA staffer. Here's Kirby.
As of last week, we were able to get things completed with Will. He'll be joining our staff in a off-the-field role. We call it an analyst, and he's already made a lot of strides in terms of helping me, helping our staff. He'll be able to help coach the coaches, and he'll be working with the defensive side of the ball. But very, very valuable to have a guy that's been a head coach at two places in our conference. He knows the ins and outs of this conference. He'll be able to help our staff, our coaches, in a lot of ways. And I'm excited to be able to have him join us.
I am so sick of those teleconference press conferences. Now, listen, that's not a shot at Georgia. They're doing everything they can to provide access to coaches, players, things like that. But you get all those dings and all those noises that kind of show up on these Zoom-style press conferences. I'll be so glad to get back to normal when it comes to stuff like that, obviously for more ways than one. But in reference to Will Muschamp there, you know, I've kind of jokingly, half kidding, half jokingly said that one of the things that I think that Muschamp has the potential to provide for Georgia, this is a guy who coached and in-state rivalry against Clemson year after year after year. And obviously the cynical among you would say, yeah, but he didn't have any success in those games, and that's certainly true. But there is something really gained from a knowledge standpoint when you watch the same team on field, on film, as often as Muschamp did that related to Clemson. I wonder, could there possibly be some sort of nugget, some sort of thing that Muschamp has picked up over the years that maybe he didn't have enough talent to exploit when he was the coach at South Carolina, but giving a chance to share this with Dan Lanning or share this with Kirby Smart, something that Georgia might be able to do in that week one game against Clemson, in a game that expects to be as tightly contested and as close as Georgia-Clemson might be, any little edge might matter, and who knows, maybe there's a chance that Muschamp is able to provide that. If he does, the couple hundred thousand dollars that he's making, trust me, a win against Clemson would be worth at least that much to a UGA. Maybe something to keep in mind. One more from Kirby on kind of how all this came to be and what Muschamp's future aspirations are while kind of parked at Georgia for at least right now. Here's Kirby again.
I would say that anytime you're an aspiring coach, you want to get on the field and get an opportunity to go coach on the grass. I know he's not through with his coaching days. That's really important for him to be able to get out there and have the relationships and go develop a position group and coach. So I know that's important to him. And his family's been his focus here recently because I know he feels like he's moved his family all over the country, and this is an opportunity for him to give back to them and be with them and be able to watch his son play.
I like that phrasing from Kirby, coaching on the grass. You know, that's obviously what he means when he says an on-field coach. I think there have been some Florida recruiting classes over the years that were probably pretty comfortable playing on grass. But in this case, Kirby talking about Muschamp coaching on the grass, which I think is really interesting. And, you know, off the top of the show, I spent some time saying that, you know, for Georgia to be the best program it can be, to be the most attractive to future recruits, you want to show a verifiable pipeline from big-time signee to first-round draft pick. You want to be that kind of professional development organization. You want to get the most out of talent and put players at the top end of the NFL draft. That's just an example of Georgia at its best. I think the same thing can be said from the coaching ranks as well, because over the course of a number of years, you will hire a bunch of coaches. I think, what, Nick Saban, Alabama, going to be hiring five new coaches again this year. That's just kind of what happens when you get to be a power program. You've got guys that have to be replaced each and every year. And the way to make sure that, much like you want to have a pipeline of good players into your program, that you also have a good pipeline of good assistants in your program is bring guys in for a little bit, let them get a promotion on the other side. Look at Charlton Warren. Came in at Georgia as a defensive backs coach, leaves the program as a defensive coordinator. Someone like Dan Lanning could be leaving in the future to go be a head coach. That's exactly what Mel Tucker did. Came through here as defensive coordinator. Now he's making big bucks at Michigan State after a brief stopover at Colorado. That's exactly what you want to be able to do. So the notion that Kirby could be kind of a reclamation figure for Will Muschamp, much the same way that Nick Saban has been for guys like Lane Kiffin and guys like Steve Sarkisian, I think that's good for the program overall. So interesting to hear Kirby Smart kind of confirm some of the Muschamp stuff last week after weirdly refusing to do that for a while. But Muschamp is here, and I think to the extent that it matters, it's probably good for UGA. All right, it's good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. I want to talk more to Connor Riley here about some of the stuff I addressed off the top of the program, but Connor also had a really good piece at adognation.com looking at, you know, kind of some of the stuff we addressed yesterday related to lines of scrimmage and how much that matters for Georgia and really any team at any level of the sport trying to compete for a championship. We'll do that with Connor and a really fun look at the 2022 recruiting class as well. So good to have him and you with us here today. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And by the way, I will tell you, it's a Kroger Fresh Take with our buddy Connor Rolla right now. Great to have him on the program today, and really appreciate our friends from Kroger for making all this possible. Connor, I know you follow the draft really closely, so I'm curious to kind of get your thoughts on a subject that I was just speaking about before, that if you look at college football in comparison to college basketball, you know, there's not always a huge correlation in college basketball between teams who produce NBA draft picks and teams who go on to win national championships and Final Fours, things like that. Kentucky is the perfect point on that. Haven't been in the Final Four since 2015. Whereas in college football, Bama may have 5 first-round picks this year. LSU had a ton last year. Clemson had a ton in 2018. There seems to be a pretty strong bond between draft success and championship success. And I would suggest, honesty compelling me to admit here, that's kind of the next frontier for Georgia. I do think Georgia needs to produce more first-round draft picks if it wants to be a true, legitimate national championship contender, the likes of which the very best programs in the country do. Do you agree with me on that, and how close do you think Georgia is to being able to do that?
Yeah, so we've seen, following sort of Georgia's draft progression under Kirby Smart, then go from a team that can produce usually one first-round draft pick a year, you think DeAndre Baker in 2018, to a place where now, you know, last year they get Andrew Thomas and Isaiah Wilson. This year it looks like they'll definitely get Azeez Ojulari and maybe Tyson Campbell in there. They need to make that step where they're gone from one to two. Now they need to figure out a way to go from two to three and then three to four, because that's where Alabama, that's where Clemson usually exists, that's where Ohio State exists year in, year out, in terms of producing top talent. And obviously, you know, there are some years that are outliers, but Georgia needs to get to a place consistently like Alabama is, where, all right, they had two wide receivers go in the first round last year, and then they have two more that are going to go this year.
So with that in mind, do you think, because you certainly follow this draft stuff very closely, would you call Azeez Ojulari a first-round lock?
I'm pretty close to it. I'd like to see maybe how he tests, specifically like the three cone and short shuttle drill. So I think that's going to be where things are best for him. But based off what I've read and I've seen, I would feel pretty comfortable saying Azeez Ojulari is going to be a first round pick right now.
How about Tyson Campbell? More likely in the first round, more likely out of the first round?
I would probably say out based on tape. But again, if he comes out and he runs a sub 4.35 or a sub 4.440, he's probably going to end up playing himself into being a first-round draft pick. I know not everyone, you know, Campbell didn't necessarily have the year everyone thought he was going to have. He still played pretty well over the course of the season. And again, you know, I think Eric Stokes is a better cornerback for Georgia, and that's why he's going to be a second-round draft pick. But Campbell, the reason Campbell was a five-star is because of his measurables, and those measurables are going to be what ends up potentially, if he is a first-round pick, being why that is the case.
So in the case of Campbell, I want to ask you about Stokes in a moment, but in the case of Campbell, you know, my thought on this is, and listen, I don't take great pleasure in saying this, but if Campbell comes in at Georgia as a five-star, leaves after 3 years, and he's not a first-round pick, Connor, it's hard for me not to view that as a lost opportunity for Campbell, and really a lost opportunity for Georgia as well. And I don't, you know, revel in saying that, but I just think it's objectively true.
Would you consider the same with DeAndre Swift?
I mean, maybe so, although I would think that running back is a little bit different than cornerback on that. That, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it seems like the shelf life on running back is a little shorter. So you might could say the same thing about Swift, but he was certainly taken very high in the second round from that standpoint. So I guess I would treat the defensive backs and the cornerbacks a little bit differently on that. I mean, sorry, the running backs and the defensive backs,
yeah,
a little bit differently.
No, I get what you're saying, but if you want to go that route and say, you know, five star, 3 years, and he's not a first round pick. I mean, Tyson Campbell, he's a second round lock, I feel.
Sure.
So, you know, day one, day two pick, I still feel like, you know, you're getting bang for your buck. You just need to find a way to get those guys to be first round draft picks. Azeez Ojulari wasn't a five star, and you know, you look at that 2018 class, you have a guy like Brenton Cox is still going to be in college next year, so there's some offense. I get the larger point you're making. I just think that's maybe a little bit of a slippery slope there if you want to go one specific example over the course of everything else.
And let me join you on something, because I think you're making a good point on this, that if you're Campbell and you get taken in the second round, odds are you're on your way towards a Sterling, you're on your way to a, you know, potential of a very good NFL career. You're off to a good start there. I think I'm thinking about this more from the fact that, to me, I view that as fodder for negative recruiting against Georgia, not necessarily against Campbell, who, you know, would have a chance to have, you know, a pretty nice career. But it becomes the kind of thing that you could potentially ding Georgia on if you were some nefarious-minded, you know, coach who's trying to be a rival in the recruiting trail.
Right. And to push back on that, I would say DeAndre Baker was a three-star that got turned into a first-round draft pick. Eric Stokes is a three-star prospect who is going to be turned into a second-round draft pick. Georgia, I think, should feel very comfortable with its development of defensive back players right now and not necessarily have to worry about potential negative recruiting aspects.
Let me ask you one more on this topic, then I want to shift gears here for a moment. Is Eric Stokes the only other name that you kind of think of as that first-round potential for Georgia? And I guess what are the chances that Stokes does hear his name called among the first 32?
Yeah, Stokes is probably the only other one. I think Trey Hill's maybe a third or a fourth round pick, and Ben Cleveland's third or fourth round as well. Again, if he goes out and he runs really well, and Eric Stokes is a gifted sprinter, you know, obviously we all know the Nick Chubb pick from years ago and his time at Eastside High School there. So if he goes out and runs really well, again, with cornerbacks, that's a huge differentiator, because, and especially with Stokes, he's got the on-field production and the on-field talent to back that up. So I could, you know, if he runs well at Georgia's Pro Day, and not having a combine this year, I think really hurts guys like Campbell, Aziz, and Stokes, because they didn't get a chance to go play in the Senior Bowl. And those guys who cement their first-round draft status or possibly earn their first-round draft status, they need to test really well.
Yeah, I think that's really true. Yesterday we talked a little bit about how the Super Bowl, I think, kind of impacts the way you think about football going forward. You kind of wrote about this a little bit, DogNation.com as well. It's kind of funny. I seem to kind of take this more from the approach of, man, you know, when you have a good pass rush, you can neutralize even a very good offense. That's what the Bucs did to the Kansas City Chiefs. I think you're right to point out that part of the way in which that happened was the Chiefs had some real issues along the offensive line. So, Connor, when you try to make the comparison between all of that and Georgia, I do think it, you know, tells you two things. As you kind of wrote about, Georgia's going to make sure its offensive line is locked away for the upcoming season, because as good as JT Daniels might be, as good as George Pickens might be, as good as all these running backs might be, if you don't have those five guys along the offensive line figured out, you could be stymied just as easily as the Chiefs were on Sunday. And, by the way, as we're all trying to figure out how you go out there and you stop these, you know, high-powered offenses, a little pass rush goes a long way in that regard, does it not?
Yeah, no, it does. And there was one player, specifically when you look at Georgia, that I came away just really fascinated with. To me, the best player on Tampa's defense on Saturday, or the most impactful one, I would say, was Vita Vea. He is a 350-pound nose tackle who, as we saw in that game, can also do a little bit of pass rushing. And you think to this Georgia team, do we see that with Jordan Davis? Because,
right,
yes, Jalen Carter and Trayvon Walker are really gifted, you know, high upside players. But I think with Jordan Davis, again, what he does in the run is similar to what Vea does at the NFL level. Tampa was first in the NFL this year in run defense. While Vea missed some time, he was a significant reason why that's the case. Jordan Davis makes Georgia the best run defense in the entire country. And I think if you're able to find ways to turn him into a more effective pass rusher, put him in situations out there where you do have him out there on third down, and that eats in the snaps of Trayvon Walker or Jalen Carter, I understand that's a tough decision you have to make, but it's a good decision you have to make. And if he's able to develop as a pass rusher, that's going to make things so much harder for the opposing offensive line and so much easier for a Nolan Smith, a Adam Anderson, a Channing Tindall, those types of guys. And that was really, again, like Tom Brady won the MVP. Tom Brady should not have won Super Bowl MVP. You can give it to a Tampa linebacker. You could have given it to anyone on that Tampa defense, in my opinion, because that was the reason that Tampa Bay won that game.
Yeah, we talked about Devin White a little bit yesterday, too, in that regard. And it's funny you're mentioning Davis, the defensive line. You know, listen, I'm not going to pretend to be some sort of former coach or anything like that, but I do feel like I follow football closely enough to know that when I see what Tampa appear to be doing against Kansas City, you know, kind of famously with the two safeties back, things like that, that for the most part playing safeties back like that in college football and trying to keep everything underneath you against really good offense, I just don't really think it works very much. You know, if you try to do that against Alabama, they'll just run the ball with Najee Harris. And so, you know, and there are a lot of examples, you know, similar to that. So if you do have the inside linebacker who's, you know, covering the middle of the field like White, if you do have the interior defensive line presence, like you mentioned, with what Jordan Davis has a chance to be, you know, all of a sudden maybe you can be a little more conservative with your defensive back play because you're handling your business in front of those guys. And obviously in college, it's just kind of hard to have all those boxes kind of squared away and checked off. But clearly we saw a Tampa scheme that did on Sunday what almost no one ever does on Saturday, which is take an offense that used to score at will and really turn the volume down on that in a big game.
Yeah, I feel like the NFL and college football are just different sports right now. Defenses, I think if you have a good game plan, you can still be really effective, as I think you saw on Sunday. Whereas in college, I just don't know how much that's true. And you can look at Kansas City. They were without Mitchell Schwartz for a while, and then they lose their left tackle, Eric Fisher, and their whole offensive line falls apart. You go back to even the Georgia-Alabama National Championship game. Jonah Williams was one of the best offensive linemen in the country that year. He goes down in the title game with an injury, and they just plop in Alex Leatherwood, and he holds up really well. He's going to go be, you know, I think a second or a third round draft pick this year. I just think the depth affects college football so much significantly more than it does at the NFL level that it makes it really hard to see what they're doing at the NFL and wonder how that even remotely translates to the college level.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, you know, listen, you've just got these mismatches on the inside, right? It's like a lot of teams have a slot receiver that's just going to be way better than any kind of like, you know, nickelback or anything like that that might be covering him. I mean, some of the stuff that happens in the middle of the field, you know, for these college teams right now, there's just in some cases a significant talent advantage that becomes very hard to kind of devise any scheme to go out there and combat. At least that's what we seem to be seeing a lot in these college football Saturdays.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if that's something that does need to be rectified or, you know, how you go about doing it. I think Some have floated around the idea of moving scholarship numbers down from 85 to 70. I think that impacted a little bit. But, I mean, okay, you add more talent to the middle class of college football, but Georgia's still going to have the 70 best players. Alabama's still going to get the 70 best players in the country. So I still think with just the way the inequity in college football right now, it doesn't lend itself to seeing something like we're going to see like we saw on Sunday with Tampa Bay and Kansas City.
And the flip side, just to kind of, you know, bring what you kind of wrote to the forefront a little bit more, when it comes to that, you know, Georgia offensive line, especially at left tackle, we're going to talk more about this, you know, later on this week on this show, but really identifying what you want to do at both your tackle spots. I think the average Georgia fan feels pretty good about McClendon. I think you probably should. But seeing someone emerge that gives Georgia the luxury of moving Jamari Salyer inside to left guard, which is what I believe is probably the best possible five for Georgia, including him at left guard, that's a national championship choice to me. I don't want to overstate it, but finding a dominant left tackle to allow Salyer to play a more natural position for him, I think that's the way you turn a very, 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 very good Georgia offense potentially into something that's even better than that, bordering on great, what you're able to do with those open spots along your offensive line.
Yeah, way back when, before Georgia played Alabama, they were coming off a game against Tennessee, and one of the big talking points was Tennessee's offensive line. And you could tell from Kirby Smart, Alabama's offensive line was way better than what Tennessee had. And Alabama had the best offensive line in the country. They had an Outland winner in Leatherwood, Remington Award winner in Landon Dickerson. They won the Joe Moore Award. And I know, like, secondary, obviously they have the most to replace there, but as you laid out there, I think from a championship perspective, if there's a position group that needs to get better, it's the offensive line. And specifically, you look at that left tackle. I think Jamari Salyer, if Georgia wanted to, they could say, hey, Jamari, we know left guard's your future, but we feel confident and comfortable with you at left tackle. I think that'd be fine. I think if you're a Georgia fan or a Georgia supporter, you want to see a guy like a Broderick Jones, a Xavier Truss, a Marius Mims come out, play well, win that left tackle job so that you can move Salyer inside and you feel more comfortable about doing that. And to me, I'll probably have something on this later this week. To me, that's the most interesting positional battle to watch, is what does Georgia do at left tackle? Because you can make a case they flip McClendon over there and try to figure something out at right tackle. Mm-hmm. You could say Salyer starts there, and then you have have those three highly touted players in suspension. So it's a really interesting position battle that I'm looking forward to seeing play out this spring.
Yeah, listen, I think the comparison here really quick, because I've got something else I want to do with you before we let you go, but, you know, Isaiah Wilson steps onto the Georgia campus in 2017 and took a year to learn, and I think he himself admitted that he wasn't quite ready for all of this when he first got here. Andrew Thomas was more game ready as a freshman, but by 2018, I thought that Isaiah Wilson was playing a very high level for Georgia as a redshirt freshman. So when you start thinking about these guys like a Jones or a Ratledge, you know, a year older, more chance to come in here and compete, that, you know, even one of these guys that doesn't have playing experience, at least a ton of it, but does have experience on campus, that could be utilized for Georgia. Now, listen, there's a part of that that's just wishful thinking on my part, because I'd love to project one of those guys into a role like that, but there is a track record within the last couple of years of someone watching for a year, learning for a year, and really stepping on the field and doing some big things for Georgia the following year.
Right, you look at Cedric Von Braun or something like that. And you know, even Amarius Mims, I know he's going to be a freshman. This will be his first year, but he's already enrolled, and he doesn't have the physical questions that we had with Roger Jones a season ago. He is as physically impressive and an offensive lineman, or maybe even an all-around prospect, that we've seen Georgia sign. And unlike Jones a season ago, and I believe Ratledge as well, Mims is already on campus. He was on campus for bowl practices, and he'll go through spring drills. So, you know, what Georgia does with him, obviously he could sit a year, but Georgia has options at left tackle, and I think it's up to the guys in that room to figure out who is going to be the best and who is going to help this Georgia team accomplish some of those goals.
Want to talk some recruiting with you before I let you go. It's our Kroger Fresh Check with Connor Riley here on Dog Nation Daily. And obviously, as you head towards Valentine's weekend, Kroger, great source on that, whether it's the candy you need for a gift or all the items you need for that home-cooked meal. There's a lot of really fun cards, you know, all that kind of stuff. You can get stocked up for all your Valentine's needs right there at Kroger. Website to remember, it's Kroger.com/Valentine's. That's Kroger.com/Valentine's. Get stocked up for the big day. February 14th will be here around the corner. So get ready for that at Kroger, Kroger.com/Valentine's for more on that. Connor, you wrote the 22 names to know for the 2022 class for Georgia. I know you've done this before for last cycle. Maybe you've done that for previous cycles as well. I just happen to remember the one from a year ago. And when you look at these kind of names to know for the 2022 class, what I kind of find kind of interesting about this is how many of these names we actually already know. Georgia has more commitments than it had, and you've kind of touched on this before, you know, than this time a year ago. We're also heading into a period in March where a lot of the other names who are not commitments are going to make their decision, either for the good or for the bad for Georgia. It just seems like a lot of stuff related to 2022 is accelerated, in my mind at least anyway, compared to where things stood for 2021, both for guys in the fold and guys who were on the verge of making a big decision here. So with that in mind, you know, kind of give us a little bit of a thumbnail sketch for how you see things with the 2022 class right now.
It's really interesting, because I asked Kirby about this on National Signing Day last week. You know, why did he think that was the case? And you know, part of it just goes back to the lack of visits, the inability of these guys to go check out campuses and see the schools and say, all right, I've got a lot to think of and process right now. And the reality is, a lot of these 2022 kids, like, they were still getting hit up on the phones for FaceTimes and Zooms, and they're probably tired with it and done with it as well, as we sort of saw in that 2021 cycle. And the lack of visits, I think, really attributed to some of these guys deciding earlier, hey, I feel comfortable with the Georgia staff, and I know what I'm doing, and I know that's where I want to go play. 7 out of the 8 commitments right now from the state of Georgia. It figures to be right now another top-heavy Georgia class, especially from some of the guys still out there. I think the most important date to know right now when it comes to 2022 recruiting is April 15th, because that is the day the NCAA's current dead period is set to expire. And the NCAA is going to have to make a decision here shortly on what does it want to do with this dead period. Does it want to turn it into a quiet period where prospects can go visit schools, but schools can't go out and visit prospects out of their high schools? Does it want to extend this dead period? What does it want to do there? Because, and they're going to have to do this quickly, because schools like Georgia, they have their spring game on April 17th, and that is absolutely, if there is no dead period, Georgia is going to be recruiting. So they're going to want to have an idea or a framework of what's safe and what's going to allow us to host these recruits to show this off. And you wonder, with all these commitments, you wonder if the visits opening back up maybe gives some kids some second thoughts, allows them to back off their pledge and go visit elsewhere. So that April 15th dead period date is really interesting, and the effect that will have on this class, I think, is going to be really interesting and worth watching.
Boy, that's a great setup for what's going to be over the course of the weeks to come here. Fascinating stuff, and obviously we're all cheering for the world to get back to normal, people to get healthy, these vaccines to get spread out, and we can have, you know, a normal, more normal recruiting cycle with a chance to see Georgia go out there and try to produce the top class, and a chance to maybe host some recruits here coming up pretty soon would certainly be a nice step in the right direction on all of that. Connor, thanks for being here as part of our Kroger Fresh Take here today. I look forward to reading a whole bunch more from you at there, dognation.com. Appreciate your insight, and I will look forward to chatting with you soon.
Yep, BA, as always, it is a pleasure, and I will not be on with you on Friday, but happy early birthday.
Hey, I appreciate that. Thank you for remembering.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Impressive that Connor remembered that. My birthday is coming up. I should also say this, that we got a little bit of a scheduling issue. Now, I'm not going to be off because it's my birthday. It just happens to be kind of a coincidence. But we are live today, as per usual. We are live tomorrow, like normal. But we are pre-recording shows for Thursday, for Friday, and for Monday. And I hope that you'll check these shows out, because we're really working hard to make these very entertaining, informative. I've got some really good stuff with Jeff Sintel, kind of the final bow on the 2021 class, the big names to know, who can contribute right away, a really deep look at some of those guys. Jeff and I actually didn't get a chance to do much of that related, you know, going back to December, so I wanted to do some of that right now. So Jeff's actually going to be with us 3 days, Thursday, Friday, and Monday, deep dive into UGA recruiting. That's going to be fascinating. There's a couple of, like, hot takes that are kind of floating out there about Georgia that I want to kind of push back on. We're going to do some of that over the course of the next couple of days. So it's going to be, I think it's going to be really fun. Kirby Smart said something fascinating the other day that I think really works well in terms of describing the current mindset of the Georgia program. So we've got some really, really good stuff planned, and we're doing all of that coming up here over the course of the next couple of days. Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG, live tomorrow, just like always. Pre-recorded Thursday, Friday, and Monday, and then back normal after that coming up on Tuesday. So that's the scheduling situation related to all of that. Now let's do our SEC through. And it certainly seems like Tennessee is trying to pull out all the stops right now to potentially hire Al Washington, the linebackers coach at Ohio State, as the next defensive coordinator. This has obviously been a tough situation for Heupel, in that a lot of eyes on who they're going to hire. It seems like a lot of things they've tried just haven't quite worked. Heupel's had a weird situation at the start of his tenure here as Vols coach related to some high school staffs who've been unhappy with him. I think it's a quick learning curve for someone like Heupel that, you know, you can be offensive coordinator at Missouri, and for the most part, you can live with anonymity. You can be head coach at UCF, even coming on the heels of kind of the embarrassing, you know, declared national championship before Heupel got there in 2017. But for the most part, you know, people in Orlando are worried about Disney World. They're not worried about UCF college football. And so you can kind of live in kind of a shadow there. But everything you do at Tennessee is going to get noticed. And, you know, when you're working to hire a defensive coordinator, if it seems like you're straining too hard, if it seems like it's taking too long, people are just going to be paying close attention to that. Now, there's also a thing at times where the stress of maybe getting turned down, not getting who you want, kind of leads you in a creative direction. There are certainly a lot of assistants on this Ohio State staff who've been there, who are, you know, Larry Johnson, the defensive line coach, kind of comes to mind. There are guys, you know, coaching positions at a place like Ohio State who are, you know, pretty sharp guys that maybe through all of this, it actually leads to a process that actually ends up with a better defensive coordinator than you started with. But these are early days for Heupel, and in these early days, certainly I think he's noticing just how much he gets noticed, and there are a lot of folks waiting to say, "See, I told you so," for a hire that they think is not going to go well. That's the sign that Josh Heupel has on his back right there. Elsewhere, when it comes to SEC coaching staffs, did think it was interesting that Carl Scott is leaving Alabama to go be defensive backs coach in the NFL with the Minnesota Vikings. We've said this before, that it seems like, I don't have the numbers to back this up, maybe if I really investigated this, it wouldn't be as true as it seems like it is, but boy, it seems like there's a lot of college coaches leaving right now for the NFL. Lateral, you know, jobs, position coach type stuff. Some of this kind of stuff always happens. Maybe it's not happening right now as much as it seems like it is, But, man, it sure does seem like it is. And, you know, this is another one of those examples of head-to-head battle, you know, Georgia fighting for, Terry and Arnold. Arnold goes to Alabama. Lo and behold, Carl Scott's now on his way to the NFL. The timing of all these things, I guess there's never really a great time for an assistant coach to leave. But the timing, you know, on some of this stuff right after signing day always seems just a little bit weird. But nonetheless, Carl Scott is leaving Alabama, moving on the NFL, and another offseason where Nick Saban's got to replace a lot of assistant coaches. He's been doing this seemingly fine in every one of those instances. I guess there was a little unhappiness with the 2018 staff, the team that lost in the national championship game to Clemson. But for the most part, Nick Saban has gotten very used to replacing these coaching staffs. And then finally for our SEC three, I wanted to mention this. Bud Elliott, who I think does good work for 24/7 Sports, was writing the other day about a kind of an interesting trend in college football. So there are a lot of, you know, programs right now who are a lot more content to kind of go transfer portal than they are letter of intent for player out of high school for a guy that may not have had a senior season or a player that the program may not felt like they had a great chance to evaluate. I think it was Texas State, I think, that didn't sign any players out of high school this particular year. Obviously, most of the power programs are a lot different than that. But in Elliott's case, he pointed out there are actually 200 fewer players this year signed college scholarships than previous years because of what we can assume is a trend towards programs wanting to lean on players in the transfer portal, guys that they've at least seen in a college field before, as opposed to a high school guy they haven't had much of a chance to evaluate yet. Here's what I take this to mean. You know, there's always this like fixation on, you know, trying to do right by players. And obviously the people who want to do right by players think they're acting in the player's best interest. The obsession in Congress, for instance, when it comes to name, image, and likeness, or the NCAA saying, hey, we're going to give you an extra year of eligibility. We're going to do right by players. But, you know, if you really listen to the players, what they want, I think many of them would say, I just want a chance to play college football. So through all of this like obsession with, you know, doing right by the players and some of the things that people seem to get fixated on, lo and behold, we're talking about a year in which 200 fewer people, 200 fewer guys are going to get a chance to play college football. How is that doing right by players? It sort of seems like the people who supposedly are aggrieved on behalf of players, I would suggest, don't really listen to what it is the players want. They want a chance to play. They want a scholarship. They want to better their lives. And we actually live in a world right now where fewer guys are going to get a chance to do that. I almost wish that some of the, you know, senators and Congress people that are kind of, you know, fixated on this stuff would kind of pay more attention to that kind of thing as opposed to, you know, grandstanding and trying to get attention for issues that the average college football player I actually don't think cares very much about. But nonetheless, we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia, you know, we always do our golden shoe every day. And one of the things I've been hearing from some of you is, hey, BA, I love doing the Gator Hater stuff, and I love the golden shoe as a reward for someone who's, you know, kind of been hating on the Gators, and people seem to be happy with that. But, you know, a lot of folks are saying, I'm not quite done with the Tennessee thing yet. In fact, some people were critical of that. I had gotten some really fun Photoshop edits of the McDonald's thing related to Jeremy Pruitt and the McDonald's bag full of money and stuff like that. We've been getting some good submissions on that. I haven't really been using. People said they want to see more of that. They're not quite done with that yet. So today I'm going to give myself the golden shoe, and I'm actually going to put a prop on our set from now on. So here is a... At least until they tell me I can't do this anymore because it's free advertising. So here is my own McDonald's bag full of money. I'm going to put this right here. And that's going to be our prop from now on to give you a little love on that. By the way, Gator Hater Countdown, we'll still do that every day as well. 263 days. Thanks for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Y'all have a great day, everybody. All right, and on video, can we get a shot of this? I don't know if we can get the camera down there on that. So for those people who kind of want a little more Tennessee hate on the program that had some fun with that, here's our new little prop here. That's our own McDonald's bag full of money. Eventually, they're going to tell me I have to stop doing this because it comes across like free advertising. But for now, anyway, we'll kind of do a little show. A little, yeah, there you go. It looks pretty good, I think. It looks pretty good. I have to say, I'm kind of proud of that. So we'll do that on the show here each and every day, at least for a little while anyway, in honor of those Tennessee Vols there. So we'll have some fun with that. By the way, R.S. Andrews, they love having fun as well. You can find them online, rsandrews.com. Your air conditioning, heating, plumbing, and electric needs, R.S. Andrews can be trusted to do all of that. They show up on time. They do the work that's promised for the price that's promised. It's one of the reasons why we love our friends at R.S. Andrews. One of the reasons why I'm very proud to recommend them. You can find them online yourself at rsandrews.com. I will start on YouTube here today. We'll take some comments there. We are not going to do comments very long today, though, and I apologize for that. We've got three shows. We've got a pre-record. So we are going to do a few comments quickly, and then we're going to move on. DMart42, glad to hear that you enjoy that. Donnie Wilkerson giving us a lousy stinking Gators. Appreciate that. Woody Tripp 100 says, why would you decrease scholarships and talk about increasing the playoffs? Yeah, I'm not in favor of